Cause marketing is big these days. A lot of us are spending top dollar on products that team up with charitable causes. Think about yellow bracelets, pink ribbons, and Tide's Loads of Hope. But our guest this hour says it can be hard to sort out just which corporations are actually making a difference and which ones might be motivated by the marketing bump. And what's more, the competition for corporate partnerships can push less photogenic charities off to the sidelines. Good morning, I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm glad to be with you today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour is Mara Einstein. She is an associate professor of media studies at Queens College and the author of Compassion, Inc., How Corporate America Blurs the Line Between What We Buy, Who We Are, and Those We Help. And what about you? Are you more likely to buy a brand when it's tied to a good cause? Would you switch brands? And how do you feel about corporations getting involved with charities and causes? Our phone number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send your email to talk@WPR.org or weigh in on our Facebook page at The Veronica Rickert Show. And Mara Einstein, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, get us started on cause marketing. How do we define it?
Cause marketing is any time a corporation or a consumer product ties itself to a charity and uses the charity as a way to generate additional funds. What I wanted to say is, in terms of cause marketing, it's not a term that I created. It was actually something that was started in the early 1980s. And some of your listeners may remember when American Express tied in to the Statue of Liberty to raise money for the Statue of Liberty. And that's when the term came about. What's happened and what's different from the early 1980s compared to what's going on right now is back at that time, it was the purview of the public relations department of a corporation. And now cause marketing is in the marketing department. So what's happened with that particular switch is that it's not just about creating goodwill for the corporation. It's about actually trying to drive sales for the consumer products.
Well, I guess at first blush, it seems like a good idea, because instead of appealing to people's base instincts, maybe not base, but wanting to appear popular and beautiful and in the know, you know, you're hopefully appealing to people's better angels or noble impulses. Is that
true? Well, that's what you would think. And I think that that's what corporations are hoping that most of us do think. We see something that has a pink ribbon on it and say, okay, well, I'm doing good while I'm buying this lettuce, or I'm doing something good for breast cancer while I'm buying a pair of jeans, right? The problem is, and there's multiple problems as it relates to this. One is that consumers don't know how much of the price of that pair of jeans is actually going to breast cancer. The other thing is most companies that do these kinds of campaigns put a cap on the amount of money that's actually going to the charity. So they'll advertise and say, we're giving $50,000 to some charitable organization, but they won't tell you when they've reached that $50,000 cap. So they don't then advertise and say, stop buying our product, we've reached the cap, right? So consumers continue to buy products, and money may in fact not be going to charities. There's also larger issues in terms of the more that these campaigns have become particularly popular, the more that people reduce the amount of money that they give directly to charity. Because consumers check charity off their list and say, oh, I already gave it to the supermarket, I don't need to write a check for this organization.
Oh, that's interesting. So, but even knowing that there's a cap, I guess, is something most consumers might not be aware of, let alone when the 50,000 is reached, they might not know that there's a finite amount instead of every single pair of jeans making that money.
Right. And the bigger issue in terms of this, too, is that this is just not the most effective way to actually get the money to the charity so that it is in a place to do good. The best thing for your listeners to do would be to actually write a check to the organization that they want to support. Looking at something like, say, the Product Red campaign, what's very confusing about that campaign, one is that there's so many products involved with it. and that each of the products that's involved has the ability to decide how much money they're going to give to the charity.
And the Project Red is Bono's baby, right? Where he's teamed up with Apple and what are some of the other brands?
It's Apple and AX and Motorola and Bugaboo strollers and Starbucks. I mean, that's a whole slew of products. And it's also primarily, if you note those that I've listed, primarily very upscale consumer products. So it's a way to make people feel better about buying these very high-priced items. And if you look at something like the Bugaboo stroller goes for $900. And only 1% of the sale of that stroller goes to charity. So we're talking about $9. Well, buy a $500 stroller and write a check for $400 to a charity that you really care about.
Well, on the one hand, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Write that $400 check to a different charity. On the other hand, we live in a culture that's so saturated with products and is driven so much by the marketplace on every tier of society. It seems like there should be a way to hack into that and redirect some of that money. It sounds like we're just not doing it very well.
Well, one of the reasons why proponents have said that this is a good idea is that they're making it easier for consumers to give money to charity. And initially, that might have been the case because it was the situation whereby you buy the product and the money goes to the charity one way or another. But what's happened now is there's an increase in what's known as two-step marketing campaigns. And that is that you buy the product and then you have to take a code from the label of the product and put in your information into an online website or go onto Facebook and like them and, of course, get your friends to like the product and so on and so forth. So it hasn't become easier. In fact, it's become harder. And the example I really like to give is the Yoplait yogurt example. Yoplait has tied in with breast cancer for a long time with the Susan G. Komen Foundation. And so consumers are supposed to buy the yogurt, eat it, lick the lids, put the lids into an envelope, get a stamp, and mail it. That's not particularly easy. And in fact, what would be a lot easier and what would be sustainable for charities over time is for people to find a charity that they like and have $10 taken out of their credit card, charged to their credit card, or taken out of their bank account on a monthly basis, and that provides the sustained funding for the charity over time. The other issue with the Project Red campaign, if we can go back to that for just a second, is that it's not raising as much money as people think it is. And in fact, there was more money spent to advertise that particular charity than there ever was raised from the sale of the products.
So there's a big PR bump for those brands, but not necessarily payback for the charities, it sounds like.
Exactly. And of course, you get into the issue of the charity. Charity becomes beholden to the corporate partner. And so if the charity isn't doing something that marries up with the campaign that the corporate partner wants, they may have to change what they do from a charitable standpoint to make it fit. And by that, what I mean is that the campaigns that are most successful are the ones that appeal to women. They also have to be ones that will look good in an advertising campaign. So you're not going to see things like drug addicts. You're not going to see things like Alzheimer's because you can't make that look good in a campaign. So the charities have to sort of mold who they are or what their ultimate mission is in order to be able to marry up with as many corporate sponsors as they can. Breast cancer, again, comes in as a great example. Breast cancer is a horrible disease. It's not pretty. But what Komen has done and has been really successful at, and Avon and some of the other organizations that use these pink ribbons, is put a pink ribbon on it. And so we see happy, smiling women walking to raise money for breast cancer, but we don't see the reality of what the disease is because they've made it pretty in order to work within the consumer context.
And I guess that pink ribbon was never trademarked or anything, so now it can be slapped on anything. It might not have any affiliation.
Absolutely. And that's what's really interesting. I mean, when I first started researching this, I found this really interesting. And I challenge you to go look in a store and look at all the different pink ribbons that there are out there. Some of them have little frayed ends, some of them, you know, are a little neater, and so on and so forth. But each pink ribbon is tied to a different organization. And some do, in fact, give money to charity. But a lot of companies have created their own pink ribbon and put it onto their packaging, and it's not tied to a charity in the least. And they say it's about increasing awareness for this particular charity.
Well, and you also were talking about the pink ribbons. There are other versions of the pink ribbons. There are the yellow bracelets. I think those were the Live Strong ones, weren't they?
Correct.
And there's different
colors for different things.
There's different colors for different causes. And then I was watching some of the Kony video last night by the Invisible Children Organization. They're urging people to, you know, also buy these little bracelets with Kony 2012 on them. And what about that, the bracelet phenomenon?
Well, one of the things that I thought was particularly interesting about this and what happens when you're talking about a bracelet is it starts to change the relationship between the people who are receiving the charity and those who are donating. Because when you wear a bracelet, it communicates to the world who you are. And this ties into issues of branding. It is the case at this particular point in time that most of us define ourselves by the brands that we use. We walk around with Starbucks cups. We walk around with an iPhone and the white headphones coming out. And so those things have come to define us in a way that our families used to, or our churches, or the jobs that we have. But those are not permanent things anymore. And so it's the brands that we use that come to say who we are. Well, those bracelets have become a form of branding for us. And so if I walk around with a yellow Livestrong bracelet and somebody sees that I'm wearing that, they say, oh, she's someone who cares. She's someone who is concerned about cancer and so on. And so that becomes a way for us to brand. And what's really brilliant about the bracelet, and particularly the Livestrong bracelet, one is that it's very bright and very yellow. And unlike T-shirts, which used to be a way that people would sort of brand themselves. You wear a T-shirt and then you have to wash it, you hope. But a bracelet you can wear every day.
Yeah, I can remember seeing that one on, you know, political candidates during the last election, too.
Yeah, well, the bracelets?
Yeah, the yellow bracelets. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe at least a couple cycles ago. And obviously kind of making tracks through all different echelons of society.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is I wouldn't say to people, don't go out and buy these products. If you like the product, buy the product. Just be aware that you may or may not be doing something good for a particular charity when you go out and do this. On the other hand, and what I advocate for is for companies that are doing things that I call social innovation, and others have called it that as well, things like Newman's Own, where you know that all of the profit is going to charity, right? Or even Viva Glam Cosmetics, MAC Cosmetics, they have the Viva Glam lipstick, and every penny from the sale of that lipstick goes to AIDS charities.
But how do you know? Is there a resource where you can sort of track some of this stuff before you buy?
The Viva Glam, that particular one has been going on for, I think, about 15 years now. It's the only product that they advertise. Unfortunately, there isn't a resource that lets you know. Hopefully my book will help people find out some of the organizations that are doing good, but there isn't, and it's not regulated, and that's what's really unfortunate.
Well, another company that you think is doing an okay job is Tide. They had their Loads of Hope campaign. Tell us about that one.
Loads of Hope is really interesting, and I like what they're doing. And Tide is owned by Procter & Gamble, and I talk about them a couple of times. They have some campaigns that are very good and some I don't like as well. But the Tide Loads of Hope is really great. And basically what they do is they take a truck that has washing machines and dryers on it and go into areas that have been devastated by Hurricane Katrina was one place. They went to the south coast after Hurricane Katrina. I believe they went into Indiana after the hurricanes there. And it's one of the things that you don't think about, that people, when they lose their homes, don't have the ability to be able to wash their clothes. And so they come in with trucks and do that. Now, that's a great thing. It's a helping hand community thing. It's something that they can do. It's true to their brand. It works for them. And they're not asking you to buy a product to make it work. And that's the difference between something like Loads of Hope and some of the other things that we've talked about.
How do these brands that engage in cause marketing, how are they doing it compared to maybe before they got involved? How lucrative is it, I guess?
It is very successful. I mean, that's one of the reasons why they do it, is that these campaigns are incredibly successful. I mean, so much so that close to 70% of organizations, consumer organizations, do some kind of cause marketing, and 97% of marketing executives believe that this is an effective way to help to sell their product. It used to be, and this was maybe only a year ago, it used to be that all things being equal, people would buy something connected to a cause rather than something that wasn't connected to a cause. And what has happened since then is people are actually willing to pay more money for a product that is tied to a charity as opposed to one that isn't. But one of the other things I want to talk about, I think this is a really important thing for people to think about, and that is, why are we looking to the consumer marketplace as a way to help cure the ills of our society? And the real reason is that our government isn't doing it anymore. The government should be involved in helping in a way that they haven't. And after Reagan and the gutting of the social safety net, that's when we had to start turning to other places in order to be able to take care of the poor and homeless and so on.
Right. I mean, I guess this used to be areas of society that were taken care of by the community and more on the grassroots level. And now I guess, you know, one concern would be that is this, are we turning people and the people who are suffering into a commodity of sorts?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what's really... That's what really pains me about this. And, you know, when I first saw, and what got me started looking at this to begin with was that I saw the launch of the Product Red campaign on the Oprah Winfrey Show. And having been a marketer for 20 years, I looked at that and I thought, what a fabulous idea, right? And I think probably a lot of people think the same thing. What a great idea. People are shopping for products anyway. Why don't we use that momentum to get people to donate money to charity? But it's only when I began to dig into it and look at how these campaigns are run, whether or not the money is going to where it's actually supposed to be going, how much money is going. Something like a McDonald's Happy Meal, one penny, that's it. One penny out of a $4 plus Happy Meal is actually going to the Ronald McDonald's House. Huh. And so consumers, yeah, right? that's what I said.
It's from McDonald's. You kind of expect something a little different, yeah.
Right, right. And so, you know... And I don't want to get down on the people who do these campaigns. I think that a lot of people who are working in the cause marketing area are doing it because they really do care. They care about the campaigns they're working on. They're not just hardcore marketers. I'm sure there's some of those out there, but there are people that really want to do good. But they're looking at it within the context of one product that they're working on and how can they sell it. And I'm looking at it at a larger social perspective. And from a social perspective, this is just really not helping.
Mara Einstein is our guest this hour. She is an associate professor of media studies at Queens College and the author of the book we're talking about this hour. It's called Compassion, Inc., How Corporate America Blurs the Line Between What We Buy, Who We Are, and Those We Help. And we're curious to hear what you think about cause marketing. How do you feel about corporations getting involved with charities and causes? And are you more likely to buy a brand when it's tied to a good cause? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert, back with you today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. As we talk with Mara Einstein, she is an associate professor of media studies at Queens College and the author of the book Compassion, Inc., How Corporate America Blurs the Line Between What We Buy, Who We Are, and Those We Help. And we'll take our first caller now. Melanie joins us from Stockbridge. Hi, Melanie.
Hi. Yeah, this is a really timely conversation. This doesn't refer to any product or purchasing, but the corporation Nestle has been partnering with Newark, New Jersey right now. They're actually forming a partnership with cities, trying to reach into infant education for nutrition. Mm-hmm. And so they're actually going to be working with the cities and working in the communities, providing education with their own trained people on child and infant nutrition, which is kind of a conflict of interest.
Hmm. What do you think, Mara?
Yeah, well, McDonald's does that same sort of thing, too. I mean, it is utterly a conflict of interest. And what gets concerning for me, and this goes back to what I was saying just before the break as well, you know, why are we turning to corporations to fulfill these needs within our society? And a lot of it has to do with the fact that, that the government isn't doing it, and all the tax breaks and all of those issues that are aligned with it. As a matter of fact, McDonald's also used to do a lot of, has information that they send out to schools to teach kids the correct things to eat. And, you know, I don't know that I want McDonald's telling me what my kids are supposed to be eating. That's for sure. Yeah, and Nestle, too, you know, they certainly a huge conflict of interest for them to be doing these kinds of things. And I'm glad that people are hearing about it and becoming more aware that these are the kinds of things that are going on.
Is there any evidence that, let's say, McDonald's goes into schools and they tell kids about proper nutrition, that because they've opened that line of communication between the community and themselves, they're going to get some feedback and maybe some pushback that could end up changing their policies?
Not likely.
No. That's a nice idea, though.
it is a really nice idea. I mean, the one organization that's doing that kind of work is the Committee for Consumer Free Childhood. Consumer Free Childhood, Susan Lin's group, and you can certainly look on their site. And they really work hard to get commercialization out of the classrooms. That's for sure.
Well, thank you for that phone call, Melanie. And on to David joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, David.
Hi. I just wanted to say that listening to the show has sort of turned me completely off of any kind of this stuff. You know, I probably will never buy anything branded with a pink ribbon again, not because I'm, you know, annoyed with the charity, but because I don't know where the money's going. And it really offends me that I now have to do research. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for saying that, because this is exactly why I wrote the book. I mean, seriously, I think most of us are exactly like you are, David, in that we saw the product, we saw it with a pink ribbon or whatever it is, or the red dress, and thought, you know, why not buy this? Why not buy something that is supposed to be helping somebody? But, you know, a little bit of digging, well, not a little bit, a lot of digging, you know, helps you discover otherwise. I mean, I was duped myself in the middle of working on this. I had bought Dawn dishwashing liquid, and I thought to myself, well, I had to buy dishwashing liquid anyway. So I thought, okay, I'll buy the one with the sea lion with big imploring eyes on the cover and the $1. And I thought, okay, $1 is going to the charity. And it wasn't until I'd finished using it that I saw in little teeny tiny type that it said I had to go to a website and input my name and my email information in order to trigger that $1 donation. And I was so angry about all of that. But that's also one of the reasons why these organizations do it, is it's a way for them to get sort of free consumer research, because they can begin to see, as you move this information onto a database and you move the information into social media, they can begin to see who are your friends, who are you talking to, what are your friends buying, and all of that information becomes grist for the mill for them to be able to sell you more products.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much for that call, David. And we move now to Ray in Oconomowoc. Hi, Ray.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I have been a publicist for 30 years, just moved from San Diego to Wisconsin, and learned how to do PR in L.A. I loved cause marketing when I first heard that Kinko's, every ream of paper that you would buy, they would plant in the rainforest. And I thought it made perfect sense. And so later in my career, I would virtually demand that my clients would hop on board some type of philanthropic activity. And then exactly like you, Ms. Einstein, what I realized was hopping on board other people's bandwagons meant that not only did you dilute your brand, you were basically a contributor to someone else's cause, but you didn't know how well that cause was effectively getting to the target audience. So here's a question. Here's a different type of question for you. I've got a brand new author. He's a brand new client. He's coming out with a book, but he's an unknown author. So all the PR I can figure out after 30 years, hopefully you have a semblance of an idea of what you're doing here. But how do you take an author? And I've dealt with Ken Blanchard and Debbie Fields of Mrs. Fields Cookies, really prominent authors. How do you take an unknown? How do you give them a cause? And how do you make sure that it resonates with its audience?
Mara?
You want the author to have a cause?
Is there a cause related to the book? Right. What I want is that the target audience, the people that he wants, consumers, to read that book, they're going to have something that resonates. So what's the best way to find that out? Do you do market research? Do you find out from the blogosphere the people most likely to purchase the book and what causes are important to them? How do I make sure that we do it the right way? I think I'm almost looking for a primer on best practices.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know that I can address that directly without knowing exactly what the book is and what the cause is. But what I would say in terms of best practices and actually the last chapter of my book is exactly like 10 things that you can do that are positive ways to go. You know, one of the things is to, if there is a charity that you are really committed to find a way to make sure that your messages are in sync with one another. So go to the Viva Glam example, for instance. You know, have a product that you are willing to sell where 100% of the profits or 100% of the sales price, that's the difference. It's not the profits, it's the whole sales price actually goes to the charity. Or that you say the sales from books at this particular time, at this particular store, or this 1 week period, or whatever it is. But it, you know, overall, my issue becomes tying charity to the consumer marketplace. What it does is it separates us from the people that need to be helped. And one of the worst examples of that I've seen is the Conagra ad. And I don't know if people remember this one, but there was one where a little girl is running around the supermarket and she's pulling products off the shelf. And it's Chef Boyardee and it's Marie Callender's and so on. And floating over her head are pictures of what are supposed to be hungry children who are all very clean and smiling. So it really takes us away from thinking of those who need our help. And then she asks her mom, did she do okay? And her mom says, oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, you're buying products that are fundamentally bad for your kids in order to feed kids who you've made look pretty instead of probably what is the reality. And then Conagra is also getting the information about you. So, you know, there's just so many issues to tying sales to that. Now, if your author wants to support a charity and say, you know, this, I support this particular charity and not specifically tie it to the book, that's a way to do it. Or what authors have also done is created foundations that are related to the book that they write.
So as part of the answer here, Mara, legislation, should manufacturers be required to have some sort of disclosure about how much is going to a charity right on the packaging, just like they're required to label trans fats?
Yeah. And the issue is that this is not regulated at the federal level. It's regulated at the local level. And the local level regulations vary. And some of them do and some of them don't. But what I would highly recommend is if people want to fight for regulation for this, is that the information be required to be presented as a per unit donation, so that if I'm buying this product, I know $5 is going, and that's broadly and prominently displayed on the packaging.
Well, thanks to Ray for his call, and we move to Tom in Menominee. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I just would like to get your reaction, the guest reaction. I work with college students, and one of my concerns in these kinds of product gimmicks is that it discourages, especially in younger people, a discipline of awareness, of charitable awareness and of charitable giving. And then I have another question, if you could just, after she responds to that.
Yeah, well, obviously I'm a college professor, so I deal with the students all the time, and I would say to you, there are some very passionate students out there, and the issue has been is that they have not grown up in a culture where they've figured out how they get to display their concern for the world. And so anything that allows them to do that is great. One example that I talk about is there was someone that I talked to at MTV, and after Hurricane Katrina, they had done a campaign where people could download music, and the dollar from the download of the music would go to Habitats for Humanity. And they did focus groups after that, and what they found out from talking to the young people was, well, we know that's okay, but we really want to do something more. And out of that was created Alternative Spring Break. And Alternative Spring Break is when kids go and volunteer their time for a week instead of going to lie down on the beach in Puerto Vallarta or in Florida or wherever it is. And that's something that actually has continued over time and exists not only at the college level, but at the high school level as well. And so those kinds of campaigns in terms of getting young people involved is a really, really good thing.
Yeah, and that story kind of highlights another one of your critiques here, is that by giving consumers the message that just by buying something, they're effectively solving a problem or absolving their conscience. It's too easy. And that was one of the critiques of Kony again, that by just buying this bracelet and maybe putting up a poster, you were doing your part. But, you know, real social change is messy, and it requires elbow grease.
Right, exactly. And well, and that's what's interesting, you bringing up Kony, is, you know, who's talking about Kony now? I mean, it was, what was it, a month ago, a couple of weeks ago? It was a flash in the pan, and then it was gone. But I think what he did, which was really interesting, one, it tapped into young people, because I think it was young people more than anyone else, because I have a 12-year-old daughter, and I was getting emails from her and all her friends telling me to watch this thing. But that he put a time limit on it. And I thought it was interesting that nobody really talked about that very much. He said, in 2012, this is the year that we have to do this. And I think that's what created immediacy. That's a very important marketing issue as well. That's what marketers always want to do, is create immediacy, create that you have to run out and get this thing before you can't get it anymore. What I'm curious to see with Kony is whether or not it can be extended, and what's going to happen now, and how is it going to be continued and brought back into top of mind awareness for people.
And I guess,
but to your point, it should not be easy, and that's a real issue. It's not easy to find jobs for people, and it's not easy to make sure that people are fed, and it's not easy to get the traffic light fixed on the corner in your neighborhood. All that stuff takes work.
Well, let's see. How about one more call before break? We'll go to Anna joining us from Madison. Hi, Anna.
Hi there. So I am coming from the elbow grease, the greasy elbow end of things. I'm a professional musician, and I have an amazing, amazing band, which I put together with the core principle being that we want to do what I have termed in-kind philanthropy, meaning I want to play wherever somebody needs. Has a well-organized fundraiser, because, of course, I'm an old professional musician, so I've been at a lot of, you know, let's raise money to pay somebody's hospital bills, and that's not how it works. I mean, I understand you need to go with an organization. And I yesterday had the experience of being at the United Way recognition dinner in Madison, or a luncheon in Madison, where they were recognizing volunteers. And I'm sitting there looking at 600 people going, here are all these organizations I want to serve, and I don't know where to start. So if I want to donate my services to help people raise money, to play at fundraisers, to play at events, to do something crazy. Where do I start?
Okay. Well, first I want to say thank you for your work. We appreciate the elbow grease. And I would say to you what I would say to a corporation is you have to, what we call in marketing, stick to your knitting. And that's going to be, for an individual, I would say that's looking at your heart. In terms of a corporation, I'm going to give you a quick example. And one of the campaigns I saw recently was for Keebler. And what Keebler is doing is in-kind donations of cookies to the American Red Cross, because after you give blood, you have to have cookies, right? And you have to get sugar back into your system. So that's a perfect marriage, to my mind, of charity and corporation. It's not to say that corporations shouldn't do good things. They absolutely should, and they can. And that's the kind of idea is, what is it that you can do? What is the ability that you have that is going to best marry up with a corporation? And, you know, and maybe that's teaching music to kids. I don't know. But you have to go with the thing that makes most sense to you and where you think that that's going to spark you.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Anna, and good luck. And we're talking with Mara Einstein this hour. She is the author of Compassion, Inc., How Corporate America Blurs the Line Between What We Buy, Who We Are, and Those We Help. And she's also an associate professor of media studies at Queens College. And we want to know what you think and how you feel about corporations getting involved with charities and causes, and what brands have you bought because it's been tied to a good cause? Would you maybe even switch brands? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send your email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 12:30 today, join us for Chapter a Day as Carl Schmidt reads from Rodin's Debutante by Wordjust. It's a coming-of-age story set in mid-20th century Chicago. Our guest this hour is Mara Einstein, author of Compassion, Inc., How Corporate America Blurs the Line Between What We Buy, Who We Are, and Those We Help. I'm Veronica Rickert with you this hour. And let's go to a couple of emails here. This is one from Lauren, who says, I love what California-based Tom's Shoes does. When you buy a pair of shoes from them, they send a pair of shoes to a child in need overseas. Yeah, Tom's Shoes has been pretty visible lately.
Mm-hmm. I have mixed feelings about Tom's Shoes. On the one hand, I like the idea of buy one, send one overseas. On the other hand, Tom's Shoes, one, are a little bit pricey. And there's organizations that are doing the same sort of thing for a whole lot less money. In particular, there's an organization called Souls for Souls, S-O-L-E-S, for S-O-U-L-S, Souls for Souls. And you pay a dollar, and a new pair of shoes goes overseas. So the same $50 that you would spend on Tom's Shoes, you can send 50 pairs of shoes overseas. There was also something that was just written up in Fast Company, on their Fast Company blog, about how bringing that kind of philanthropy into quote-unquote third world companies actually is detrimental to the local economies where the foreign aid is being accepted. And they specifically talk about Tom's Shoes and how it's hurting some local vendors in terms of going into those areas.
Okay, that's an interesting critique. I hadn't heard that. From Jane in Madison, Paul Newman's Foundation seems like an example of doing it right. And I think they are one that you give the nod to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Newman's does great things. The only thing I would say about Newman's, which I was surprised to find out, Newman's Organic is a separate company from Newman's own. Newman Organic is actually run by his daughter and doesn't have the same donation structure. There is some money that goes from Newman's Organic, but it's not all. In terms of Newman's own, all of the profit goes to charity, and I think the work that they do is really fabulous.
Okay, well, thanks, Jane, for the email. And back to the phones, to Tristan in Appleton. Hey there, Tristan.
Hi, Veronica. You guys were talking a little while back about how much of the donations go to causes and that. And when I was in the Air Force, we had something called the Combined Federal Campaign, And in order, and I don't know if it's the combined federal campaign as a whole or just what the Air Force was involved in, but we would get a little pamphlet every year, and we could have deductions taken out of our pay, and the money would go directly to the causes. And in order to actually be involved in the combined federal campaign for the Air Force, at least, no more than 10% of the money could actually go to overhead. So basically 90% had to actually go to the cause. Hmm. In order to be involved in that. So that was something that gave a lot of us a great deal of cause for hope. And it actually gave us the percentages of each different organization and how much they spent on overhead, which is great.
Yeah, that's a really wonderful thing. And thank you for your service. It's, a couple of thoughts about that. One is what you're talking about is direct donation and not something that's tied to the purchase of a product, which is absolutely the way to go. In terms of finding out information about how effectively charities are running, there's a website called charitynavigator.org. And if you go to their website, they will tell you, you could look up your charity and they will tell you how much money is actually going to administration. It's a really great site for that.
Okay, Tristan, thanks so much for the call. And on to Jeff. Jeff is from Two Rivers. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there. In listening to your guest, I agree that there are some things that need to be changed. There is some honesty that these companies need to put forth with what they're doing. And they really shouldn't, if it is going to be charity, they shouldn't tie it to gaining information. But in also listening, I'm hearing judgment of these companies and what they're doing, where Keebler is okay for donating cookies, which are not exactly a healthy item, but McDonald's can't put forth some nutritional information. Now, if McDonald's was putting forth nutritional information that was incorrect, or if they were saying, hey, go buy our food anyways, okay, that's a problem. But if they're simply putting forth sound and nutritional information, you know, in the end, everybody doing a little something is better than a lot of people not doing anything.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you, Jeff. It's an interesting point. And, you know, after all, don't we want our companies, our corporations to be good corporate citizens to you know, lead ethical, quote unquote, lives? So what's wrong with them trying to do good?
There's nothing wrong with that. And I also have to say, to remind folks out there, I come out of 20 years of corporate. So I was one of those folks, and I know exactly the kinds of things that they have to go through on a daily basis to get their jobs done. And the last thing I wanted to do with this book and with talking about this is to bash organizations. What I want to do is to motivate people to do the kinds of things that are going to work. So rather than doing the kinds of things where you are just putting some kind of a label saying that you're donating to a charity on a package and getting consumers to buy a product and getting their information and putting it into a database, to do the kinds of things that are going to help make a difference. Whether Keebler is donating those cookies or not, people are getting cookies after they donate blood because they have to get sugar back into their system. So that's an example of someone that's doing something good. What's also makes sense is for companies to look at how they actually do business. So one of the companies I talk about is Chipotle, for example, and they use all organic products and they source their meat from local farmers and they actually help local farmers to develop the way that they raise the animals to be humane. So it's about how you do business and making sure that how you do business is good for you, for the people, and for the planet. And what ultimately happens when organizations have looked at those kinds of things, they have found that they are more profitable. It works all the way around. It's the triple bottom line that people have talked about before. And in terms of McDonald's going into schools, the issue with McDonald's going to schools, and it's not just McDonald's, Nike sends stuff into schools to teach kids about math, I think, through sending their shoes and how their shoes get made. It's having corporations of any kind in the classroom. They just shouldn't be there, to my mind, because kids
don't have the ability to be able to separate the messages. They see a commercial, for instance, and they don't know the difference between just a song and a jingle for a corporation. And they just don't have the reasoning skills to understand that this is a company that's trying to sell them something.
Hmm. Well, as part of it also, the branding of you know, nutrition by McDonald's, for instance.
Right.
I'm sure that's not how they sell it, but it's sort of happening inadvertently anyway.
Right. And what's happened, too, is that kids as young as three are able to identify certain logos. McDonald's is one. The Target logo is another one. And I don't think that kids should be thinking in terms of food being branded. I know that's a hard road to fight, but you know, it's something that we certainly should push back against.
Well, let's move on. Let's see. Beverly is joining us next from La Crosse. Hi, Beverly.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. And thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple comments to make. The first one is political. When I found out that Target gave $12 million to the, and I think it was $12 million, I'm not sure, but approximately that amount, to the Republican Governors Association, I stopped shopping there. And I tell all my friends, don't shop there, because they give money to political organizations to run these terrible ads on television. My second point is, very often I have gone into a store and they say, well, I use a credit card or debit card. How about adding a dollar on for Toys for Tots? Or how about adding on a dollar for muscular dystrophy? Or how about adding a dollar on for, I always say no, because I have no idea where that money goes. And they could just be adding to their bottom line. They could take that dollar and not give a dime to any kind of a charity. And, you know, because it's all rung up on the same bill and everything, and I don't believe that they ever give anything to anybody.
It's an interesting question about that, the tacking on a dollar at the checkout line.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'll take my answer off here. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call. Bye.
Okay. Thank you for bringing that. That's one that makes me a bit crazy. It's not one I specifically looked into, and someone I talked to has said that the money actually goes, but I'm not convinced. Two, it's very irritating. For me, it happens at my local movie theater. Every time I go to the movie theater, they're asking me for a dollar for something else. But there's a couple of issues with that. One is that, you know, why should they get, if the money is actually going, why should the movie theater get the tax write-off instead of you? Frankly, you should, if you choose to do that. The other thing is, too, and particularly as it relates to these campaigns, is as it relates to tax write-offs, as these campaigns have moved into the marketing department and they become part of the advertising that these corporations do, because that is a cost of doing business, these campaigns become an additional write-off for these organizations as well. So, yeah, I don't know how we stop that, but I would really like to stop it. And we cannot be the only two people who find that to be fairly irritating every time we go to a store. But I would recommend to people to just say no.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Beverly. And we haven't talked much about the role of celebrities in all of this. Mm. And I assume, maybe I'm wrong here, but it's more attractive if you have a celebrity tied to a cause, and that could bump certain charities ahead in the line.
Absolutely. There is the ability to bring attention to almost anything if you tie a celebrity to it. And that's why, whether we're talking about a charity campaign or a particular product, that organizations use celebrities. They're just magnets for public relations. And I want to say as well, I have nothing wrong with a celebrity tying themselves to a charity. So, for instance, George Clooney went to Darfur and brought a lot of attention to Darfur by going there and creating films about it and so on and so forth. The issue becomes when you tie a celebrity to a charity that's tied to the purchase of a product, because then it starts to get blurred. And is that celebrity selling the product, or is that celebrity trying to promote the charity and trying to help raise money for the charity? And the line gets very, very blurred in this particular area. You know, going back to Bono, I mean, one of the reasons why Product Red got so much attention, certainly Bono, and a lot of the CEOs that were involved and ultimately signed up to be part of this got to meet Bono, and that's why a lot of them wanted to do it. It was also brought a lot of other celebrities on board. There was Oprah and Steven Spielberg and Penelope Cruz and a whole list of other people. So it begins to become the situation that if you have one celebrity, are you good? And do you have 10, are you better? But what happens is, this is what I talk about in terms of what I call hyper charities, which are the Feeding Americas and the Susan G. Komen's and these very large charities, is they get so much attention because of these celebrities and because of their sophisticated marketing capabilities that smaller and local charities aren't able to get the kind of funding that they need.
Well, Mara, it's been a great hour. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk today.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Mara Einstein, our guest this hour, she is the author of Compassion Inc., How Corporate America Blurs the Line Between What We Buy, Who We Are, and Those We Help. And thank you to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and to Cynthia Schuster and Rob Ferret for taking your calls today, and also Marika Suval for production this week. And remember, if you want to maybe post a comment, catch up on some of the links that we've been mentioning the past couple of hours, you can check out our Facebook page. You'll find it at Veronica Rickert, at The Veronica Rickert Show. And stay tuned. There's more to come today. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'll see you back here next Friday.